Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air in your feeds every single Wednesday with pleasure. How are you, Dan?
I am great. I have just had such a fun day at ATM, the Arabian travel market. The only thing I wish is that you were here, because I know that running around those markets, we would have a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, a lot of stuff to gossip about. And now I'm just here like, let me store this in here for later.
You're like when you consult with ChatGPT and it says memory updated. That's you throughout the day. So give context, Arabian Travel Market is a massive travel expo that occurs in Dubai, and it gathers much of the Arab world, but also the rest of the world, to do business with everyone present. And you don't just have travel companies, tour operators, hotel brands, hospitality vendors, but you have the airlines as well. So there is a big aviation angle. I couldn't make it this year. You have been, this is your second day there today?
Yes, second day.
Yeah.
And
how was it?
I mean, it's super cool. It's very hectic. I kind of gravitated toward the Scandinavia section because I was like, I'm comfortable here. And I immediately started talking to an older Finnish woman who was literally hilarious. Like, so many people from Finland are hilarious because they're so deadpan. She just went like, she was talking about, because Scandinavia is one booth and they're all together. Actually, not only Scandinavia, the Nordics. And that includes Finland, that includes Greenland, that includes the Faroe Islands. And she was talking about, oh yes, we have everyone represented here except Sweden, because Sweden don't care about anything. And she just says it completely seriously. And Oscar and I, she was roasting
true?
Sweden. I think the Swedish Tourism Board is just so uninterested in trying to attract anyone that, you know, can give money to our economy. So
is that because there's just too much going on in Sweden, that it's like many of those countries that have just lost their way in which they're managing such difficulties domestically that the last thing they can think about is, hey, come and vacation here?
Well,
is that why? Or
First of all, let me just say that I think that Sweden domestically doesn't have huge issues compared to a lot of other countries in Europe. Yes, we have a lot of gang violence, but it's very concentrated in certain parts of the big cities, and everything else is perfectly like normal and everything is fine. But I will say that I think the Swedish government and the tourism board doesn't really see the value in building its brand as a tourist destination, like Norway has done and like Finland has started doing in recent years for winter tourism. Sweden is more, they sit back and let people who are actually interested in going to Sweden for Sweden, not for anything else, come and explore. But I know that they actively try to discourage certain nationalities from coming. So in that sense, they...
Like who?
The Dutch, for example, I've heard, which is so funny, out of all countries.
The Dutch?
Yeah.
Just right next door. I was expecting you to say, I don't know, they just have this diplomatic issue with the people of Kathmandu. Something really specific. And you're like, the Dutch?
Yeah, the Dutch are not welcome in Sweden. Because I heard this through the grapevines, and I'm probably not supposed to be repeating this, but the stereotype and the data that the Swedish tourism agency has is that all the Dutch show up in their camper vans with 2 weeks worth of food purchased in the Netherlands, and they drive along the Swedish roads, getting as little petrol as they can, not spending any money in restaurants, not spending money on any accommodations, and not spending money on any hotels. They just sort of come and use facilities, but don't contribute much. Is this the type of demographic that typically comes to Sweden from the Netherlands? So that is why I heard that they actively don't do any marketing in the Netherlands. And in fact, maybe they're planting stories to discourage people from trying to spend time there, which is
that's so funny. So see, funny. We learn something every day, something new, and now I know, because I'm just thinking about, for example, my neighbors in Spain. I've got loads of neighbors that are Dutch, but also that are Swedish. I'm thinking I should arrange a dinner or something.
But who's going to pay?
I need to see this play out. But it's a valid point from Sweden's side of that not being beneficial to anyone, right?
Yeah.
That type of tourism or that type of visit. Because I often find exactly the same is true of cruise tourism or cruise tourists, right? So in Doha, there is a long cruise season, and these massive cruises, some of the biggest in the world, pull up and they spend around 12 hours there, let's say. And these tourists in their thousands exit the cruise. And then they start, they get bused to like a key site, like, I don't know, they go to the souk or they come to the Pearl. And they're with their backpacks. And in the backpacks is the water from the cruise, is the sandwich from the cruise, is the snack from the cruise, and the chocolate bar from the mini bar of the hotel room on the cruise.
Yeah.
And they're walking around, they're taking photos of things. They don't go into a coffee shop. They don't so much as buy a latte. They don't go into a supermarket. They look at everything from the outside, but don't actually step in. It's like window shopping, showroom style tourism.
Yeah.
Where I don't see how the state benefits even a real, less than a dollar, right? From these tourists, and then they all get back onto the coaches, and back onto the boat in time for dinner. So me and my friend and I decided to put this to the test slightly. And one evening we were on a walk around the marina, and these tourists asked us if we can take a photo of them. Sure. So we take a photo. Oh, where have you come from? They said, oh, we're on a cruise that we left Dubai this morning. We're going to, where are they going? The next,
Bahrain.
Can't remember anyway. Kuwait? Were they going to Kuwait? I don't know. Anyway, so they were saying that they had been so many different places, and or maybe they were actually going back round to Oman that way. Maybe that was correct. Anyway, okay, great. How did you find Doha? And they were looking around like, yeah, wow, it's beautiful. It's amazing. Oh, what did you do? Oh, nothing. What did you, where have you eaten? Can we recommend any places? Because they told us they didn't have to be on the cruise until 10 that night. Oh, can we recommend you somewhere for dinner? They were like, no, we're not going to eat. Oh, you're not? No. Oh, okay. Oh, are you sure? Because there are some great restaurants here. No, we have dinner on the cruise every night. So I'm thinking like, yeah, okay, this just confirms the theory of that, plus the fact, side note, I don't know if we ever spoke about this, but you could not pay me. I know some people have incredible experiences, and I'm happy that they do. You could not pay me to spend even a night on a cruise.
Not even Absolutely a Four Seasons not. Or a Ritz-Carlton cruise? Those look pretty cool. I would kind of, yeah, I would do
okay,
that.
Okay, hold on. That's not really a cruise. They're like 70 people only.
No, I think it's like maybe 70 to 100 rooms. So like 200, 250 guests.
I don't know. Okay, I'm not speaking. Even that, I don't think I would enjoy. But let's just talk about, you're talking about something very niche, right? Let's talk about a cruise as a whole, right? And all the cruise lines and all of the amazing ones and the Oasis of the Seas equivalent and the MSC, blah, 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 World Europa, Utopia, something, something. Okay. All of these, whether they're small or large or whatever, you couldn't pay me. I feel they are long, narrow corridors with low ceilings. I don't like the idea that you're constantly vulnerable to weather. I don't want to feel any such movement when I'm having dinner, okay? And the fact that I can be having dinner on a so-called holiday and it's like, oh, don't mind the horizon up there, just tilting up and then tilting back down again. Forget it. Also, the whole thing about hygiene. You know how extensively I've spoken about that. That is a disaster. It's a cruise is a floating Petri dish. One gets it, it takes them all out. I mean, I'm stereotyping, but it's my thought.
I mean, that's fair. Anyway. I've never spent the night on a boat. I would definitely try a Four Seasons or Ritz-Carlton kind of cruise, but I imagine that the guests could be a bit... not
a bit white, you know, our type.
Yeah, or even worse, like I know some people who have been on Four Seasons jet style trips where you take up one of those private jet itineraries. Yeah. Not private jet, but
the
shared
321 Neo.
Jet around the world, and the stories everyone comes back with about the guests being absolutely insufferable is what scares me away. And I just finished White Lotus season 4. Season 4 yet. I would season have, three. You know, if I'd finished season 4, I would have some intel, but no season 3.
Yeah.
So I'm very much in that mindset.
I don't want to hear about it.
I'm not going to lie. At ATM, I'm low-key chilling around the Four Seasons pavilion, just waiting around to see, will someone come up and be like, what are you doing here? Let us make you a brand ambassador.
This is the beauty of having a podcast, right? That we're when we're recording in the moment. Let me just make sure that this delivery guy. Okay, he's left. All right,
I was like, what does this have to do with he's delivering your yacht? No.
Okay, there we go. Go on.
Anyway, yeah. So I'm standing around there hoping for someone to just offer me unlimited free stays at Four Seasons, basically. Which is
what about the airlines? What airlines are present, and what airlines have you been been visiting, negotiating with, discussing,
negotiating. You know,
what... Yeah, I mean, you were with your Points Master Pro pitches just on the podcast. God only knows what you do at an expo.
Yeah, sometimes I do actually tell like some of the staff that if you want to get if you want to get business instead of your standby economy, let me help you. I'll let you get it, you know, cheaper than you can get it on your staff rates. But basically, it's so. We would just crack up, you and I, about the variation in the different airlines' stalls, because you have everything from one little white desk with one chair in the middle of nowhere that's Lufthansa Group with some mints on the table. You're just like, this is so tragic. And then you have the likes of, I mean, of course, it's in the Middle East. So the Middle Eastern airlines are generally going all in. Except Gulf Air, which also had one little couch in front of a sign that says Gulf Air. That was the extent of it in the Bahrain area. I'm trying to think which other airlines had very random, lame ones. Oh my goodness. Guess which airline has quite a big stall? Cham Air. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Cham Wings. Is
Cham
that
Wings.
It?
Cham Wings
from
of Syria.
Syria has like a decently sized desk showing off their amenity kits. Mm. I'm like, you guys have amenity kits?
Well, look, I mean, it's Syria's one of the older civilizations, right? We know that. And there are other airlines. Syrian Air goes back to the 70s. I wonder if, I'll try and find out if Cham Wings had this set up last year under the former regime. Or if this is a new regime, new Cham Wings kind of era, which of course Syria is going through, thankfully. So yeah, that's interesting that they had quite the presence. Question, were Riyadh there?
Of course, Riyadh was there, and they were, they had people triggered for sure with their massive stall showing nothing besides some cabin materials.
Did they have the seat?
No, they didn't, because from what I heard, they didn't have time. They didn't have time to ship it from Jeddah between the reveal to get it to Dubai on time, because they couldn't. They don't have airplanes to fly it there on. I think that's the story here. But anyway, I think they're going to display it sometime soon.
Speaking of Riyadh, the CEO did an interview with Bloomberg yesterday, and he said that. No, Riyadh Air isn't currently yet facing impacts or difficulty from the tariffs. It's not yet it's not affecting their pricing and things like that. I'm thinking, I was watching it really trying because Tony, bless him, didn't hammer down clear enough that he was probably referring to Boeing aircraft prices. And to anyone else, it looked like he was discussing what other airlines are discussing, which is the impact on fares and the impact of operations, which of course Riyadh Air currently have none. So it was just a funny interview that he said it hasn't impacted. So Riyadh were there, and then of course you got the massive Gulf carriers. Of course, Qatar, Etihad, and Emirates were there. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So first of all, there was a huge Saudia stall, which I haven't been to yet because I just flew Saudia. I know their thing. I don't need to go see what they're displaying. But yeah, we have Riyadh Air next to that. Then we have Qatar Airways, which is displaying their Q Suite 2.0. It's my first time seeing that
seat. Q Suite next gen. Q Suite NG. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my first time seeing that in person. I have to say,
I forgot you haven't seen it.
It's actually a crazy seat. It's so cool, isn't it? Not only is it so spacious, but let's first talk about the windows, because this is the craziest thing. The window seats now allow you to open up the entire seat to push the screens to the side, meaning that you can sit completely face to face with a companion. You can dine at the same time, or if you want, you can spend the whole flight face to face if you don't want to use the in-flight entertainment. And you have these new storage bins. I couldn't figure out which seat was supposed to be forward facing and which was supposed to be backward facing, but whichever seat is further from the window,
the seat that's next to the
that's the forward facing, is it?
The seat that is further away from the window is the forward facing. The seat that is closest to the door is the forward facing.
So personally, unlike in the current Q Suite, I preferred the seat that was closer to the aisle, the one that's forward facing, because you have even more storage in that seat now than you do in the one closer to the window. You have this massive first class style compartment on your side that opens up, that's under where you have your wireless charging and all this stuff. You have now a locker that you input a PIN code if you want to lock to keep things secure. The seat
which is excellent.
The seat is so much more comfortable in terms of softness, in terms of spaciousness.
Yeah.
Of course, there's always a few things that you're like, okay, this in Q Suite next gen, there's a few things that could even be improved. Like now I was confused. Why is the charging port basically under the bed in the new Q Suite? Which means that when the bed is reclined, you won't be able to use it. Or the tray table now, which is, I know you highlight this a lot, it is incredibly sturdy, which is crazy.
Very sturdy. Yeah, which was very important, I know, when I spoke to the designers. Yeah. And also, crucially, it tucks fully, it stows away fully and is not impacting where your knees are, because how many of us who have flown 100%. Current Q Suite have hit our knees when turning, even just when you're in bed.
Yeah, exactly. But the one thing, I mean, these are all, we're talking about what is undoubtedly the world's best business class seat. And of course, everything cannot be 100% perfect. But the one thing was that you can't actually leave your seat while you're using the table if you're in the forward-facing seat.
Yes, there's no way to push it forward
because there's no space. And I understand. Yeah. But everything
it's
else...
It's a business class product. But it's. I think I'm so... I forgot that you haven't seen this seat yet. And I'm so happy that you felt it was as revolutionary as it actually is, because in an era where every airline and their son is unveiling new business class products, the word revolutionary and blah, blah, blah are being bounced around endlessly. This product is not just an enhancement of the existing Q Suite, but is a massive, massive overhaul, number one. Number two, it is so innovative, yet again, bringing a feature to business class globally that doesn't yet exist. For me, it is what you said. The standout feature is the companion suite. The fact that two seats facing each other on the window can interconnect and we can face each other, meet, dine, chat, play cards. And it is something that doesn't yet exist. And that's what I always appreciate of Qatar versus the other Gulf carriers, which is the way that it does set a new benchmark that then we'll probably see similar kind of thing in 4 or 5 years from other airlines who realize the benefit of couple suites or companion suites and so on. So that's why I think it's cool. That plus the sheer size and scale of it. I mean, it's massive, isn't it? It's just huge.
Yeah, it is enormous. And I think as you say, it almost makes the old Q Suite look SHIT in comparison. The current Q Suite is amazing, but the new one is just truly so much more of a level up that they're creating a new problem for themselves, because someone who gets an equipment swap from Q Suite next gen to Q Suite old gen will now be pissed. I will be one of those people. So cycle keeps repeating.
Here we go. There's an endless cycle. He's going to have those videos of him like, this is the thumbnail.
Yeah. And then let's get to the middle seat, which is just absolutely awesome as well. Because of course, I would say the single best thing about the previous Q Suite is the quad, being able to fly with three or four people and all be together, being able to talk. We had so
Which
much fun.
We just when did. We yeah, just did we it, had didn't
so
we?
Much
on
fun
the way
on that
back
flight.
From Singapore.
I've flown it with family, friends. It is just a next level experience. And now they've taken that to the next level by making it almost entirely open as well. So the screens fold completely to the side. You can see everyone. You can talk to everyone. It feels like it is probably the biggest open space within a suite in any aircraft in the world. It rivals, the size of Singapore Airlines first class suites. Of course, you have four people sitting in there, but it just feels so spacious, so massive. And I can't
compared
wait
to
try
every
it.
Other product out there, we are talking about something that is on the more affordable end of the spectrum, that is priced as a decent business class fare, that is accessible in terms of people being able to find great deals to fly this product versus something that is totally out of reach like the Residence or Singapore Suites. And so that's why I think it's really nice for people to get excited about. It's gigantic. Did you notice the height of the doors and the height of the
Yeah, I
the
didn't
walls?
Feel I that mean, they were that much. I felt like it was the same as the current one.
Is they
that,
are higher. I can't remember the exact measurement, but they are higher
a little bit.
So once again, kind of privacy.
Yeah, the door is so much smoother. It's like like butter
it's like
when
a,
you close it.
It's like those soft closing drawers in a new kitchen where no matter how hard you slam it, it's still going to control, which is great because a few flights ago, so maybe about 2.5 weeks ago, coming back from, I don't know where, maybe, no, it can't have been Hamburg because that was 787. Okay, it must have been London. London Doha, the guy that was sitting in 1 alpha and I was in 2B, oh my word, it was as if he I dread to think how he is at home. He was going out of his way to slam shut his Q Suite door and slam it open. And he went to the bathroom about 20 times on a 6-hour flight. And it was an overnight. And as I was sleeping, I can't tell you, it was like mini earthquakes every time this guy left. God knows how he acts in society with actual doors, I dread to think. But you're right. That is now impossible with Q Suite next gen doors because of the way that they are slow closing and glide closed. And thankfully, because they put in the effort to obtain necessary certification globally, the suite door actually closes, unlike most other airlines who have so-called suites, and they get away with much cheaper, easier certification by ensuring that the door stays this much open. And that's what they call a closing door. Not in my book. If that door is not closed, it's not closed. Therefore, is it really a door or is it an enhanced privacy divider?
You're right. My favorite thing, if I have to choose one thing that Qatar Airways prioritizes in business class, it is the ability for people to sit together. Because now being able to sit together in the window, this is something we're seeing less and less from airlines. They don't consider families, they don't consider couples, people who, even if you're flying with your parents, you might want to see and interact with them during the flight.
Of course.
Even new first class products that are introduced around the world, cutting edge products, now eliminate the possibility to even sit two people together, let alone three or four. So I really hope that this creates a new trend of airlines realizing the importance of people having direct aisle access, but also being able to interact, being able to share the fun of the experience. Yeah. And I think that is truly what sets this apart.
And makes it of value, but makes it an experience for the individual rather than just a very much, makes it less transactional, makes it less, this is for you and your flight, but it opens up and unlocks new opportunity in something that the airline actually doesn't have to invest much in, just by having that companion suite that interconnects and the screens fold back, you have a whole new air travel experience depending on who you're traveling with.
Yeah.
That is just brought out of the enjoyment of what, you know, two humans interacting with each other rather than anything that the airline has had to invest too significantly in. I'm conscious of time. Wait, I was going to ask you.
Just have to add two things. I have to add one wish and one not quite criticism, but we've poured so much good things onto this that I have to say two things.
Sure,
my
sure.
wish is that when Qatar introduces this seat, they will finally learn that they don't want to be like Turkish Airlines. They don't want to be like Thai Airways and swap planes. There are airlines in this region, Etihad, Emirates, right next door, that never do equipment swaps, even on routes with the Game Changer, which Emirates has a very limited number of, even on routes with Etihad's new business class, the reverse herringbone. They do not swap planes. They'd rather have lower utilization than have people end up in a different configuration. Qatar Airways still doesn't seem to realize that if someone books Q Suite, even if you let them rebook, it's inconvenient to have to change your flight to another time or date.
Especially if it's the same day.
And now they have such a big Q Suite fleet that they don't have to do that. My second thing is
that will iron itself out with the introduction of more aircraft. That's their plan.
My second thing, which ties in Turkish, which I'm going to talk about in a second, is what is going on with the Allegris vibes that we have here with Turkish and Qatar showing off seats years before they're actually going to be installed on aircraft. Because from what I heard, they said ideally, possibly, we'll get the Q-Suite next gen in 2026. When it sounds like it's a possibility, that means we're more likely looking at 2027.
So I have an answer on this. So where we are right now in terms of supply chain and the issues with Airbus and Boeing and so on, the seats are ready prior the aircraft. They are ready before the aircraft, right? So the uncertainty, of course, is where do you fly them? Just a couple of days ago, the CEO of Qatar Airways, Badr Almir, sat with Jumana from Bloomberg and confirmed to her that it is now more likely, and he said they are 80 to 90% there in ensuring that the decision is doable, actionable, and something that can be executed. He said they're 80 to 90% sure now that Q Suite Next Gen will debut on the A350-1000 and not the 777X as planned. Why? Because there is no clear timeline on the delivery of the 777X. There is no clear timeline on the necessary certifications. There is still a massive question mark over Boeing's future flagship. But the seats are ready.
Yeah.
So what do? They continue waiting or not? So and so that's why he's taken... So that's them kind of being a bit more agile and saying, right, let's see if then we put this on the... And this is not just a consideration. He said that they have actively set up this as a task force that are taking the decision to have this debut on the 350-1000. I spoke to him shortly after that, and he said to me that the plan now is for the 350-1000, as he reiterated in the interview, they're almost 90% there with the decision. So they've already got an existing order of 350-1000s that are still coming off of the production line in Toulouse. They're taking the next ones this summer, so that's very soon. He also confirmed in the interview the A321neo, between six and 10 of them will be delivered over the coming financial year. So that includes most likely this side of this year too. So that's en route. 787s, dash 9s are still arriving. One a couple of weeks ago, the next one in a few days. All of this will help that wider, you know, inconsistency issue many airlines are facing, and so that's good news on the whole.
That wasn't really my point. My point was just that I don't think airlines in general, I don't want to encourage the Allegris thing of showing off a seat years before it is installed on a plane.
They did that to get Skytrax. I mean, that's why Lufthansa did that.
But Qatar is doing this to once again really be like, look, we have the best. But they revealed this seat in 2024.
Yeah, but
so
the seat is ready.
Best case scenario.
The seat is ready and the aircraft is not.
It's going to be 2 years before you can try it. And the same goes for Turkish, because I was shocked. When
I think it's less.
Well, we'll see when it comes out next year.
Think about it. He revealed the seat because the aircraft is not ready. They can't just not reveal the seat. So it wasn't because they want to emerge as we've got this great new seat, but it's not ready. The aircraft is not ready. Now there's a plan. It's going to debut on the 351,000. It will be earlier than 2027.
No, this is not valid because Cathay Pacific could have also done the same thing and said, this is our Aria suite. This will be on the 777X. But they immediately started installing it on the 777 after they displayed it. And they have not showed their first class, which we know they're going to reveal for the 777X.
So you would have preferred them not unveiled it?
If they weren't going to install it on existing aircraft straight away, yes. And the same thing goes for Turkish. Right. And let me explain why. Because they had their new business there. And I was 100% under the impression that we were going to get it this year. And they've been marketing it, and they made a huge deal when they revealed it last summer. And then I'm disappointed to find out they say, yeah, we're aiming to launch it next year. And I'm like, this is not even a custom-made seat. This is a Safran Unity that you can buy. Yeah, you have so many aircraft without direct aisle access. You could be installing this right now. Yet they're also there displaying it when no one is actually going to be able to try it on board. I'm opposed to that concept. Meanwhile, let's just get to Etihad quickly because Etihad is
I want to hear about Etihad. So they unveiled the 321 Neo first class, business class, and economy. What did you think?
Exactly. So again, I loved that they, on the same day they revealed it online, people could go see it in person. And this is a seat that will be flying in less than 3 months. So they haven't been teasing us for ages. Of course, it's not as revolutionary a seat as Q-Suite Next Gen.
And it's a narrow body, single aisle aircraft. Okay.
Precisely. We just spoke about this last week or a week before. The seat is just what we expected. It's pretty much close to as good as a narrow body business class seat gets. The only thing I can think is missing is a door. They chose not to add that for weight. I don't think it's going to be the end of the world. This is the business class seat.
For listeners to try and visualize what Etihad are trying to do, fair game to say a bit kind of jet bluey in terms of the...
Well, it's actually the opposite. Think more about any airline that has a reverse herringbone. Think about British Airways Club Suite without the door. Think about... Actually, it is very similar to Qatar Airways 787-8 business or A350-900 business on certain aircraft. It's a reverse herringbone without a big screen next to you. So you don't have a ton of privacy, but you are facing the window, which is the biggest blessing on a narrow body when all these airlines are installing seats to face the aisle, which was so 2000 of them. We had luckily have Etihad installing real reverse herringbones facing the windows to give you a view outside, more privacy.
You've flown the ITA Airways one. How does it compare to that?
I haven't flown it.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, no. Okay.
But it's the exact same seat. It's the exact same model, just different finishes. Yeah. And it looks luxurious. It's spacious. Yeah. I think it will be good. The bigger question is first class, because when I saw it, I was like, where's first class? They're like, this is it. And I'm like, oh no. I was like, wow.
When someone shows you a baby for the first time.
It's so cute.
So cute.
That was me. I was like, oh, so this is going to be $5,000.
So it's
just what every other airline has, a business plus seat at the front that Etihad has decided.
This trend.
which is good if you can buy it for like $150, $200 extra, not $600, $700 like the Lufthansa Allegris, or thousands extra like it's going to be on Etihad. What they've done in connection to this is introduced a way more elaborate ground experience. Over the coming months, they'll be greatly upgrading their chauffeur service, the soft product, that kind of stuff. The soft product will be first class, but you don't have a curtain separating you from business. You don't have a dedicated lavatory. You still have the tiny A321 galley that, you know, slows down the service. So I won't say this will be a huge success yet. I wonder who's actually going to pay the retail prices for this, or if it will be more of a thing that people upgrade to using their points or using their, you know, cash at check-in. Or
I think that's a more sensible route. But as you say, I don't see there's going to be many people forking out thousands for first class on something that's identical, or not identical, but so similar to business.
And not to mention the fact that the cities it's Well, now we know it's going to be sent to a lot of capital cities, which we thought was quite questionable, like Paris, Bangkok.
Yeah.
But then it will be sent to Krabi, Chiang Mai, cities that we love to see get direct service from the Middle East. This is what this aircraft was made for, but these are not first-class markets. So who is booking, you know, $10,000 round-trip tickets? We'll see. I look forward to trying the business and the first class seats eventually.
Well, certainly not anyone who's taken your Points Master Pro course, because they wouldn't need to, would they? They only need to pay apparently $10 and then they just find themselves in first class.
Not quite 10, but definitely
a quarter of
the cash price.
I swear it says for free.
No, it does not. It does not say, for free anywhere.
I know. I'm joking. Can we move on to less tensions between you and I, and more to do with tensions between India and Pakistan?
Yeah. Ugh. This is bad news.
Over the past week, the tensions between India and Pakistan have escalated significantly, and crucially, how it links to our conversation here is that it did lead to the closure of Pakistani airspace to Indian airlines and widespread disruptions in air travel that then followed. So if anyone hasn't been across the news, on the 22nd of April, a terrorist attack in Indian-administered Kashmir resulted in the deaths of 26 people, including Indian and foreign tourists. India attributed the attack to the Resistance Front, which is an offshoot of the Pakistan-based militant group Lashkar-e-Taiba, accusing Pakistan of supporting cross-border terrorism. Pakistan responded by denying the involvement and condemned the violence. What then followed? So, once India had accused Pakistan of the involvement, Pakistan closed its airspace via a NOTAM. That is, quote, a notice to airmen. It is officially a public document in air travel that relates to airspace, air traffic. It is for the attention of airports, pilots, operators, aviation ecosystem in general. And the NOTAM announced that Pakistan will be closing its airspace specifically to Indian Airlines on April 24th, and that closure forced Indian Airlines, including Air India and Indigo, to reroute approximately 600 flights, leading, of course, to longer travel times, which means increased fuel, increased costs, and sometimes an additional stop in Europe in order to refuel. Indigo said that they had disruptions on about 50 of their routes and also cancelled some flights where Pakistan is a key overflight area, including flights to Almaty in Kazakhstan and also to Tashkent. I wanted to discuss quickly the legality of this, because aviation and the skies are ultimately governed by the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, the freedoms of the skies. And although it is a grey area in terms of enforcement, you can't call up the police and say they've just violated an ICAO annex, it can be challenged in the courts. It can be challenged, firstly, within the council of ICAO, and that's, you know, I spend a lot of time there in Montreal, but also outside of that, some countries have taken it to the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, The Hague, and so on before. Specifically, the legality of Pakistan closing its airspace specifically to Indian operated flights, Indian Airlines flights operating for Indian Airlines, also Indian aircraft. That is a violation of the transit agreement, the ICAO transit agreement, and also the ICAO Chicago Convention, because it is stipulated quite clearly in these annexes that in order to close your airspace, you cannot do so by specifically discriminating against the nationality of an aircraft. So if you want to close your airspace as a whole, fine. If you specifically close to a nationality, that's violating those two conventions.
But that's so interesting, because that's what the EU did toward Russia, for example, and Belarus.
Well, this is why it's a real gray area here, because there are so many scenarios where the West believes it the morally correct thing to do, that then it doesn't get mentioned, that actually that's in direct violation of those annexes. And that's why I said there's no enforcement body here. There's no one to pick up the phone and report X, Y, Z, but they can challenge it and take it to court. A similar thing happened in the blockade in the Gulf. Things happen all the time as well with this in relation to Israel. It happens a lot with Russia. It happens with Belarus. It happens in South America between various countries that are disputing there. And ultimately, if you were to look at ICAO's freedom of the skies as the law, which again, kind of a gray area as to whether or not they're breaking the law or they're breaking conventions, they're breaking annexes, they're breaking treaties that they are signatory to. And that's the issue here. From an aviation perspective, keeping politics and everything that happened way out of it, never like to see that aviation is weaponized in this way and that a country is specifically targeted. You discriminate against the nationality of that country by punishing only those airlines, those operators, and that nationality. But as is often the case, these aviation is used as a weapon as part of a wider dispute, and that's what we're seeing here. Many people wrote into us to ask about the legality of it, and I hope I just did a fairly okay job at kind of explaining the gray area of that.
You did great, sweetie. You're doing great.
Never call me that again. I don't care if you're quoting Chris Jenner.
Yeah. Just to give some examples here, Air India from... Well, besides the flights that have had to divert, like flights from Canada to India, which are now stopping in Vienna largely, although there was a few stints in Copenhagen because I guess they wanted some of that Scandinavian flair. But now, for example, Delhi to London is taking about 50 minutes longer than it was just a few days ago, flying south of Pakistan, sort of toward the Gulf and then up over Iran and north. What Air India is doing is they're updating their schedule on a daily basis. So even a week in advance, they still have the old schedule.
Yeah,
if you look at tomorrow's flight, the schedule has been updated to add 50 minutes to the scheduled time, which is, of course, weird because it makes the flight look on time when in fact it's nothing like what you booked. But Air India can't really do anything about that.
No. When it happens with countries like this, that Pakistan is such a key overflight area. It's difficult.
It is. One discussion we have to have on a future episode is the mind-blowing fact that since COVID, there is not a single direct flight between India and China. The world's two largest population centers.
Crazy.
Do not have any direct flights due to poor diplomatic relations, but they still allow overflights. So you have, of course, Chinese airlines flying over India, and Indian Airlines flying over China, although the Himalayas are quite a good border for India there that no airline is really flying over. So the Indian flights that do fly over China fly south of those and then up. But we will, of course, keep an eye on this.
You just said south of those, and in my head, this is how my head works. In my head, all I can hear is south of the border.
What is that song?
Are you for real? Oh my God, sometimes that. Well, see, the older listeners are on my side here now. They're thinking he doesn't know south of the border, down Mexico way. No, nope.
It's that 2 month age difference that just makes all the difference.
It does. Seriously, how do you not know this? Okay, I'm going to have to start sending you now. Okay. What are we talking about next?
Well, we are going to move on to Q&A because, guys, we're drowning. And all we can say is if your question has not been answered, please bump it. Send us another bump Q&A.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So that it appears closer to the top of our flooded inbox. But thanks for sending the questions. We appreciate them so much. And we will go right into them now.
I have a question here. It's from Alex in Doha. He says, how the hell does Dan not know Frank Sinatra?
Oh, that's Frank Sinatra. Of course I know Sinatra, but I don't know. I don't know your Southern song. I know New York. And all the other good ones. I have a real question here from Siraj. He says, with better quality Wi-Fi offered now on many airlines, for example, Starlink on Qatar, how do you best manage fellow passengers who make video calls on speakerphone? This happened on a QR flight to Doha. And when it had woken both me and later on my wife, I'd say something to them to please turn it down, and the crew also politely asked. The man in question seemed to ignore it initially. However, I think it was his wife said something about following the crew instructions, and he finally did. But he was definitely disturbing everyone. So what would we do in that situation?
I carry a spare set of headphones to like just in case to give to someone, like a cheap pair of £2
That's
headphones.
That's so passive aggressive. I love it.
Just in case. No. I've had to do it once, right, to a kid, because I was like, "Hi, like that's really loud," and everyone's and of course the reaction was, "Oh, he doesn't have headphones. Here you go," and he took it, and then it was fine.
That was.
QR now play on the Starlink flights. They play that video. Do you remember I showed you? And it says about it on our flight,
I saw
didn't
it,
you?
Which is
about
great.
Keeping headphones in and stopping the noise.
It's great that they do that. But like for example, on a recent, actually on the Saudia flight I took from Jeddah to Dubai, which I was posting about on my stories, there was two parents next to us with a kid I assume was below two because it was a lap infant, lap child, but. Definitely bordering on two.
That child.
The bordering on two because it was massive. They were playing
it.
It wasn't it because it was behaving like an animal. They were playing whatever kids' videos constantly out loud. And just when I was going to ask them, somehow it was like they felt it coming and then it would go off and then we wouldn't be asking.
Would you be up for airlines that operate multiple frequencies a day, let's say between London and New York, right? BA flies so many times, so many sectors throughout the day, I think like 10 times or something, right? Would you be up for one of those sectors being kid free?
I don't think that's right. I think it should be more idiot free. There should be like a test that you have to take.
The idiots will find their way. The idiots don't know they're idiots. And that's what part of the reason why they are idiots.
Actually, they should make a not idiot flight. And then just all the idiots would end up taking that and normal people would take the other flights. But anyway, I don't believe in kid free flights, but I do think that it should be a bit stricter and there should definitely be a no playing things out loud policy that the airline enforces. I don't know what they would do, but anyway, let's move on. So here I have a question from Kenji.
In front of me, I'm looking.
Okay, go ahead.
At a question about from Carmen about the blackout in Spain, just asking for our thoughts on the fact that Spain and much of Portugal were off the grid and complete shutdown. I spoke to friends and also relatives that are there. What a nightmare. I mean, the fact that everything went down from internet to lights to it's power in general. And also the chaos on the road, the traffic lights not working, the public transport being grinding to a halt, the airports also facing the same kind of shutdown. Super. We're also fragile, like globally as a society, we're so vulnerable to these things. And I wonder if we're going to get more of them. What was the reason? They said an unusual solar phenomenon. I don't know. I'm not buying it. I don't want to spread misinformation, but
someone like fell asleep and their head hit the wrong button. And I was
I don't know. Or like, you know, the kind of, you know what I'm thinking, but I don't know. I thought that the way in which once again, society is exposed to be incredibly vulnerable, which we are, to all of this is just worrying. Yeah.
Exactly. So Kenji says, this is actually a good question. Not all questions are good, but this one I love because I think about this a lot. I recently wrote to an airline about the improvements that could be made to make my flight better, basically based on a past flight. They replied to me stating that they will be giving the message to the operational team. In our opinion, what are the chances they will actually take the information and implement it to make the airline better? My thought on this is that surveys matter.
Depends what valid.
Survey responses matter and airlines look at those. However, I don't think they necessarily read specific advice or ideas from people. But if you express a negative sentiment, that will add to the general negativity that they're receiving in their surveys. If you say the food wasn't good, that will add 1 point to saying that food was bad. And hopefully over time, with enough responses, they will look into changing that. But true. I don't think they necessarily...
You should always get across your thoughts and feelings because it does more often than not reach the relevant departments. Even though you get a very generic response, more often than not, it is actually reached that department, despite the fact that it feels very, very, you know, not very human in terms of their kind of standard. We appreciate your feedback. Thank you so much.
That's it,
you know.
Yeah. precisely. Adrian has a good point here for everyone, which I think is great to point out. Regarding our discussion on U.S. pre-clearance, of course, it also exists in Montreal, in Toronto, which is good to be aware of. So that's another place you could potentially transit and not have to worry about getting detained. I mean,
that's not really pre-clearance, is it?
You arrive as a domestic passenger in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. It's not pre-clearance that is the pre-clearance scheme that you have in Shannon and in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
But you do, you cross the border in Canada.
Precisely. Yeah. And the bigger benefit of this is that you actually get the Canadian Charter of Rights when you're transiting there, which, you know, has benefits for passengers. So
a bit another more with the passenger in mind. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, I love this. This is also great because I'm so excited about this news. Sai says, love the podcast. Have a question. Just found out about Virgin Atlantic starting flights to Seoul in March 2026.
Yeah, this is interesting. Last week and I was worried to say it.
Yeah, you were hinting.
And it's just as well I didn't because I would have broken the little embargo. Yeah,
exactly. I think this is super exciting. You know, Virgin,
I think it's exciting, but Virgin is an absolute shit show with their route network right now and everything that they're canceling. So they canceled another route in the Caribbean. I can't remember which Caribbean destination they've just pulled the plug on.
They didn't have to cancel anything to launch the Seoul route because what happened was that because of the merger of Korean Air and Asiana, they were forced to give up a pair of slots at Heathrow, which means that Virgin Atlantic was basically able to inherit these slots from their SkyTeam partner for almost basically free. And slots at Heathrow, part of the deal. But the deal was you need to launch flights to Seoul to keep the partner capacity on this route. But it's an amazing thing for Virgin because those slots are easily worth $70-80 million. And now,
I mean, they were worth 70 million years ago.
Yeah, so 10 years ago.
That was like 10 years ago. Everyone goes by the famous Oman Air slot that we all know went for like 60 million.
Do you know the story
mil.
About those slots? Do you know which route the Oman Air slots were from?
I did, but I forgot.
You're going to die. So for many years, my parents' whole lives until I was whatever age when it happened,
he's gonna say
SAS had twice daily flights from Gothenburg to London, and those were the slots that broke the record when they were sold to Oman Air, and SAS said bye bye London, and they moved their flights to Stansted for a little while.
The reason why it went viral
to do that and
because
it
was the first time in history that the world managed to find out how much these slots at Heathrow are actually worth, and people were like, "What?" Because it sold for something like 60 mil.
Yeah, 60 million pounds. Yeah. Right. So, of course, for SAS, that made sense to say, screw Gothenburg. We're going to just get rid of a couple of slots and send people to Copenhagen instead.
You're lucky they didn't give them up for 60 quid, never mind 60 mil.
It just shows that Gothenburg has some historic aviation value. So,
Works its way in, doesn't it, to every chat, that little relevant city.
But so the point about Virgin here is that they are only launching this route because they had to in order to secure these additional slots. They have to serve it for at least 3 years. They're flying daily with their 787-9. I just think it's fantastic because Virgin has been abandoning Asia like it's on fire. They cut their Shanghai flights. They cut Tokyo, Hong Kong.
Did you see they've just permanently cut Tel Aviv again?
Yeah. Honestly, I think Virgin Atlantic needs to focus. I understand the connectivity to and from the US, but come on, give us long haul. We want true long haul from Virgin Atlantic.
I agree. Would they not want Bangkok? I mean, the sheer number of like Virgin Atlantic is such an airline made for Bangkok, and the sheer number of visitors and the fact that BA are like asleep at the wheel with Bangkok, like just do it. But I had this full list, and the reputation in the industry now of Virgin is that it's these constant route announcements that never end up launching, or they do launch them for a few weeks and then they cancel them shortly after and whatever. I do think Seoul is going to go ahead, but there's just no clear strategy as to what exactly it is they're trying to achieve here. I get profitability, but what it is they're trying to achieve here with their route network, who they want to be. They've just launched Riyadh with a question mark to me as to why.
And the flights are empty.
I understand why some airlines will launch Riyadh because of the connectivity. But who is connecting on Virgin Atlantic through London to Riyadh? You don't need to. You'll do it with a Gulf carrier.
Exactly. And Virgin Atlantic is just not the airline you imagine flying to Saudi Arabia. Let's just say that. But, we love Virgin Atlantic on air. And we hope that they launch Bangkok, because that would be awesome.
They should.
That is underserved. It would suit them perfectly. And it would suit me perfectly, which is why I want it so much. Yeah. Oh gosh, we have so many more questions, but this is turning into a Qatar Airways episode.
No, skip that one.
Because this is also this relates to Oman Air, and it's interesting questions.
Okay,
because,
okay, all right. This is a very golf-heavy episode.
Yeah. So on to my question. My father was a former captain at Oman Air on the A330, working the last 2 years of his career at Oman Air there in Doha under the wet lease. If you didn't know, Qatar Airways was wet leasing quite a few Oman Air A330s to increased capacity. Once the wet lease was terminated in January this year, we left the company and thus the Gulf. Which brings me to the question, do you maybe have an insight as to where these A330s will be repurposed? And I saw something the other day that I was like, what? Because as I've said before on the podcast, I love to check the latest airline deliveries, the latest aircraft deliveries. Then I saw an A330-300 to Qatar Airways. And I was like, huh? Alpha 7, Alpha Echo Romeo. Then I checked the history, and go figure, it's one of the former former Oman Air A330s that they used to operate. But now they've taken it on, actually it just launched flights today as we're talking on Amman. What is this? Do you know? Because they've taken in an aircraft they were just operating a few months ago, but now it's under them. What is the deal?
The aircraft are currently parked on a taxiway at Hamad Airport. Drove past them the other day. My understanding is that they will be absorbed into the QR fleet.
Okay.
To help them cope with summer.
So
they wait for deliveries.
So what is the point of that compared to just continuing the wet lease?
Because it's no longer a wet lease, because Oman needed to sell them.
Okay. Yeah. So Qatar Airways wanted to keep them. They just needed to go through the legal process of acquiring
They need the capacity in the summer while they wait for aircraft deliveries, which are, very few and far between. And the Oman Air wanted to sell the long-haul fleet, which is the 330s. The 330 part of the long-haul fleet. And the wet lease agreement will not continue as it did prior, but instead the aircraft will eventually be, I don't know if it's all of them, but the aircraft will be absorbed into the QR fleet. That's what I heard the plan is. That's why they're sitting in Doha waiting for reactivation.
Interesting. So in fact, for passengers, the situation doesn't change much from when it was a wet lease.
Correct.
It's
correct.
Just, yeah. And do you think they'll be repainted or no?
No clue. No idea. But I think it'll be on specific routes only. They won't fly everywhere. And again, it's just to increase capacity while they wait for deliveries from Airbus and Boeing. And I hope that we get into a place globally where new aircraft are able to actually arrive to these airlines to stop them relying on all these third-party aircraft and partner fleets.
All right. And let's round it off with another question in the Gulf, this time Riyadh Air. Jack says, I saw the recent reveal for Riyadh Air's cabin, and whilst it looks sleek, I'm struggling to see the game-changing aspects that it was hyped up to be, especially in economy, where it looks like a relatively standard Recaro R3 seat with a 31-inch pitch relative to ANA's announcement of their 787-9 refurb, and it's using the same seat, but a 34-inch pitch. So do you believe it's possible for service to be elevated that high that Riyadh Air could be differentiated so much from other already strong carriers to justify the hype they are going for? Boom.
I think we touched on this, didn't we? I think we touched on the fact that you're a victim of your own words if you keep, touting about something being game-changing, and actually what you're introducing is a very nice, very well-designed catalog product that is not innovative in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And is in the constraints of a tight 787-9. So I don't think it's game changing. I think a lot of people agree with that. That's not to say that it's not a beautiful, well-designed seat. I'm sure it's very comfortable. There are pros and cons to it. And a lot of that comes to the fact that it's in the constraints of a Dreamliner, which is tight and small. But the, that's the answer. The whole thing about it being a game changer thing, we didn't say that. The public haven't said that. The airlines said it. So they have to be careful when throwing about these terms.
Yeah. And I think we should just mention here that you cannot compare any airlines to Japanese airlines when it comes to economy class. Because Japan Air and ANA both offer just the most wildly inefficient but spacious and comfortable configurations that you can't compete with. 31-inch pitch is actually pretty standard in the Gulf for economy. Of course, standard in Europe. Most parts of the world, it's just Japan where we get so much more. And of course, the prices reflect that. Even in economy, these airlines are way more pricey than Western competitors flying in and out of Japan. So you pay more, you get more.
Very true. Well, look, I'm happy to hear your full roundup of ATM, the Arabian travel market there in Dubai. It sounds like you had fun kind of schmoozing and mingling around with the players of the Arab world in aviation. And I'm here, happy to hear your lowdown as well. Of the you are sketchy. I'm happy to hear your lowdown as well.
I am the least sketchy person. I'm so transparent that it's bad for me.
Oh God, he's now using the podcast once again as his own therapy sessions. Dan, I think it's time to wrap.
It is. Well, we will talk soon. I'm gonna head out and mingle some more, and I will see you all and you, Alex, next week on air. Bye bye.
See you later.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.